Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com. Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
We are going to examine three significant aspects of Governor Walker's state budget proposal that he released yesterday during this hour: transportation, education, and welfare. And we will welcome your questions and your reactions, too. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, February 9th. We are going to start the hour of our roundup with transportation. The governor repeated his position that he does not favor raising the gas tax to raise revenue to fill the transportation budget deficit, and he said his proposal would get the job done.
This budget gets all the active major projects outside of southeastern Wisconsin back on track. It adds funding for the work of on Interstate 94 from the state line north through Kenosha and Racine counties. And it frees up resources to address the long-term transportation needs of the state, putting in place new reforms that will help lower the cost of building our infrastructure.
So, what's your reaction to that? Do you agree or disagree with the governor's approach to the transportation budget? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our first guest. Chris Rochester is the Communications Director for the John K. McIver Institute for Public Policy. Good morning.
Thank you for having me on, Joy. Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So, as mentioned, Governor Walker did not call for raising gas taxes or vehicle registrations in order to help fill that nearly $1 billion roads budget shortfall. Instead, he does plan to borrow about $500 million while keeping major highway projects on track. Were you surprised by what the governor proposed, Chris?
Well, we've been following the governor's budget proposal and the requirements he put on DOT late last year for some time. So we weren't really surprised. I think the $500 million in borrowing is better than the $850 from the previous budget. And the fact that he has stuck by his pledge not to raise the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee, I think is a good thing from where we stand.
Yeah. But while he was saying that that this was going to get the job done, highway projects in the Milwaukee area would be delayed while work elsewhere, like in Dane County, would remain on track, or other parts of the state. How does that sit with you?
Well, I understand a lot of traffic doesn't move through the zoo interchange in particular. The core of the zoo interchange is to be completed on time. The north leg of that project will be put on hold, and I-94 east-west as part of that project is also put on hold. In the ideal world, those projects would move forward on time. I've driven through there many times. It's an inconvenience for sure. But I think especially when we look at the DOT audit that came out recently, it's pretty clear that the state bit off more than it can chew some years ago, and there's just simply not the money there to complete those projects. So, I mean, it would be ideal to be able to complete especially those particular components. It would be ideal to complete the I-94 north-south project, which runs through the Racine area. But, the money's just simply not there. There was a Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo as well that came out not too long ago that said to complete all the mega projects that are currently enumerated or underway would take a gas tax hike of 28.1 cents, which is a 91% gas tax increase. So I think the governor does a pretty good job of prioritizing and spending money in some of the more rural areas, outstate, where there's really a need for road maintenance money right now.
Yeah. Well, Assembly Speaker Voss said that that it was disappointing that Governor Walker has forgotten that a long-term solution for transportation is a priority, too. Do you agree with Speaker Voss? Do you think that Walker's plan is not offering a long-term solution and that he doesn't think this is a priority?
Well, I certainly disagree that Walker doesn't think it's a priority. I think it's a matter of where the priorities are placed. Walker's spending more money on local road maintenance projects, puts an awful lot of money into the state highway maintenance fund. But Voss is right in the fact that, more people are driving more fuel-efficient cars, electric cars, hybrids, and, the gas tax over the long term is going to continue to decline, and that's a national problem that we have. So he's right to say that continuing to tie road funding to the gas tax over the long term is going to be a problem. But there's no easy solution, as Voss himself has said, and I would say that raising the gas tax is the easy solution. There's been a lot of different ideas bandied about. Toll roads are one, which would require a waiver from the federal government. That could take many years. And from there, you'd have to actually put in place the infrastructure. So whatever solution that eventually gets put on the table, it's going to be years before it gets implemented.
Yeah. Well, Speaker Voss also said, quote, Assembly Republicans offered up a budget framework to provide at least $300 million in tax relief with a corresponding increase in transportation revenues and reforms to begin addressing the transportation fund deficit, using the higher than expected revenues that were coming in to do this. What about that as a solution?
Well, I'm still waiting to see the details of that. The framework that was put out basically said, we're in the assembly, we're willing to cut taxes by $300 million in exchange for raising revenues, whether that be the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee, by that same amount. Walker did say that the only way he'd be open to raising the gas tax or the registration fee would be with a corresponding decrease in taxes elsewhere. So, that's still it's hardly a framework. It's just, agreeing that, yes, we'll cut taxes if we can get this revenue increase. So, as this process unfolds, the budget process over the next few months, we'll definitely see a more concrete plan, and then we can see what exactly the speaker proposes.
Yeah. In a column that you wrote last month, you wrote that you hope Republicans would muster the creativity to find the right solution for their constituents, not just the easiest solution. So what do you hope to see the legislature do in terms of transportation?
Well, as I wrote, I think the easiest solution is the gas tax increase. It takes a lot of burden off of legislators who would otherwise have to really dig into this DOT audit that came out that just recently. It found that, for one, it found a piece of good news, $1.5 billion in savings under Mark Gottlieb, the former Secretary of Transportation, so that's a good start. But the audit also found terrible record-keeping practices. There were a number of cost overruns, and there were no minutes that were kept in the meetings where those cost overruns were authorized. So that's an important thing to remember. It also found, as of August 2016, the DOT had cost overruns of $3.1 billion on just 16 projects. It appears that they weren't taking inflation into account adequately when they were initially presenting the cost of some of these projects to the legislature. So if you are, if you're a homeowner and you agree to a couple projects getting done in your house, and you agree to a certain price, and then the bill comes back later, nearly twice as high as you thought it was going to be, that's going to kind of make you mad, and you're not going to want to go back to that contractor. So I think the legislature really has to, before they give DOT more money, they have to do the really hard work of going into DOT and figuring out what's going on, getting more accurate cost projections, so they don't enumerate projects that they can't afford moving forward.
Yeah, we have just a minute left before our news break, and before we let you go, do you have just an overall reaction to the budget presented beyond the transportation fund?
Sure, it was a little surprising at how much money it spent, but you know, there's certain things in there that are good on that front. I think the sparsity aid for rural schools fulfills the needs of a lot of rural school districts that, you know, they simply have to transport their kids farther because they're larger school districts. It also creates a new tier in sparsity aid for districts that are a little bit too big to get the normal sparsity aid. That's a good thing for those districts, and I know that the legislature has a kind of a similar set of proposals to what Walker presented there.
And we're going to leave it there because we are out of time for this segment. Thank you so much for being with us. Chris Rochester, Communications Director for the MacGyver Institute of Public Policy. We are discussing different aspects of Governor Walker's proposed state budget during this hour. We just heard from a guest about transportation funding. Now we will turn to education funding. And here is what Governor Walker had to say about that in yesterday's budget address.
Last November, the State Department of Public Instruction requested an increase of $200 per student in the first year and a $204 increase per student in the second year in the budget. At the time, some suggested that we could not get close to that request. Well, this budget provides a $200 per pupil increase in the first year and a $204 increase per student in the second year. Ironically, I don't remember critics saying the budget request from the Department of Public Instruction wasn't enough last fall, which is probably why school leaders all across the state are saying such positive things about our budget proposal.
So are you saying positive things about Governor Walker's budget proposal when it has to do with K through 12 education funding? We'll also talk about what he is proposing for the University of Wisconsin budget as well during this segment. And welcome your questions and thoughts at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our next guest is John Witte, a professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So, Governor, we'll start with... I actually think we should start with the K through 12, since that was what we just heard there. Does that sound pretty good to you, or what are you thinking?
Well, that's a very large increase, particularly for a Republican governor with a Republican legislature. The whole budget seems to be a little bit strange in terms of the partisanship of it. It is only a budget, Joy. That doesn't mean it's passed yet. The legislature has a lot to say about this from this point forward, and so we'll see what happens. But it certainly is a pro-education budget in both the University of Wisconsin system and the K-12 system. The K-12 system is, I've been a long time since I've seen the Department of Public Instruction's request matched. That goes back to Democratic times quite a while ago. So that's quite an accomplishment if it goes through. I may not go through in all that at that level, but it's certainly going to have to go through at some level. The legislature would be now put in a very, very bad situation if they sort of said, well, no increase. So that's not going to happen. If they cut it down, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Governor Walker's budget calls for increased school funding of nearly $650 million, and he also boosted state funding for the University of Wisconsin system by roughly $135 million, which obviously is a change from previous budgets. Why do you think the governor moved in this direction?
That's, of course, a $64,000 question everybody's asking. One of the issues is, I mean, maybe he's just listening to the citizens of the state of Wisconsin. There is a K-12 issue out there. They know they were cut back by Act 10. The funding has been cut back the last few years. And they're also facing what may be a teacher shortage. Rural areas have very difficult time getting teachers. And there's special money for rural districts in this budget. So he may be listening. That's one positive thing. Of course, it is also coming up on an election year in 2018. So this is an election year type budget. Budgets usually go up prior to election years if a governor's rerunning.
Charles on Facebook says, the real question is, how will Governor Walker define public education? Expanding the voucher programs and mandating one-to-one device purchases really means directing more money to his corporate donors under the guise of increased funding for public schools. Before anyone gets excited about this money, shouldn't we ask the governor to specify what strings will be attached to it? Talk some about that. Is this money going all to public schools, or is this money going to voucher schools, and what strings are attached?
Well, clearly, most of this is going to public schools because it's going to the state aid formula. $200 the first year, $204 the second year. That's $400 increases per pupil in the public schools. That's the state aid formula. So the vast majority of money will go there. The one big string on it, which may affect Madison, actually, is that districts have to have their employees paying 12% of their premiums for pensions and for health care. And the Madison school teachers do not pay that. Some of them pay 10%. The administrators pay up to 10%. Some of the newer employees only pay 1.5%. So they're going to be below that 12% figure. And if it goes through as it is, and there's no sure assurance that it's going to, they would be cut out of a lot of that, of considerable amount of that money. So the districts, that's the major string that I can see in the budget at this point, is they have to pay their insurance premiums. And that they don't know. They said they don't know, and I certainly don't know how many other districts do not come up to that 12% figure.
Yeah. The increase in funding for public schools also, if I'm reading this correctly, is counting on $60 million in savings from a state going to a self-insurance model. How realistic is that? What do you think of that?
I have no way to judge that. That's been discussed for the last 10 years. It's been the subject of an enormous concentrated effort that I saw a number of presentations of the last year on if this is a money-saving device or not. I found it extremely strange to tie it to education funding. He's trying to keep the budget balanced and maybe put pressure as well on the insurance system. That is a risky business to go to a situation like that. When you're going to self-insurance, the self-insurance system would be administered by the current providers. So, for example, Dane County Dean Care, which is SMS, would administer the Dane County self-insurance program, and the other companies, providers, would administer different parts of the state. So it's not like you're throwing out your provider. As a retiree, that's an assurance for me. On the other hand, I did read a comment this morning that someone made that was very cogent, and that is the entire healthcare system in the United States is in flux, right? We don't know where we're heading with the entire Obamacare. What are they going to do? Are they going to pull it back? Are they going to change it? What's going to happen? Strikes me that this is a very strange time to put that radical change forward until things stabilize. I would, if I were in the legislature, I guess I'd say, let's sit on this for 2 years and bring it up the next budget cycle and see where we are in healthcare.
We are talking with John Witte, a professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, talking with him about the education funding aspects of the state budget released yesterday by Governor Scott Walker. The legislature now will be taking a whack at it, and we welcome your questions and your reactions, especially when it comes to the education funding. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll talk a little bit about UW funding now, and the governor is proposing actually freezing tuition next year and then cutting it for the 2018 academic year. What do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You know, and I should note, as I forget to do sometimes, that I am an employee of the University of Wisconsin Extension. And our guest, for that matter, is a professor emeritus from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So full disclosure, as we are discussing state budget issues that affect us. Anyway, let's talk about the Governor Walker calling for this freezing tuition next year and then cutting it in the 2018 academic year for all resident undergraduate students, regardless of need. He also wants to freeze tuition for the resident student in the technical college system and would provide that system $5 million to pay for it. Talk some about your reaction to this tuition freeze slash cut.
Well, first of all, let me just say I think higher education costs are an issue in the United States, a relevant issue very much so, and so I'm sympathetic to that. And also, the origin of those costs are across the board. But whenever you're dealing with an education institution of any level, about 80% of the costs are in personnel, their payroll costs, okay? So some of the brunt of the increases has to come with the increasing costs of administrator and faculty and staff salaries. And I assume that's true at the University of Wisconsin as it is everywhere else. Now, having said that, I'm surprised by a 5% cut in tuition because of the fact that we are still a very good deal, particularly for residents and for residents of Minnesota as well, where we have a reciprocity agreement on tuition. And compared to the Big Ten or our comparative schools, we're really at the near the bottom end. Iowa's lower than we are, but that's about it in terms of tuition. So we are still around the country very, very good deal. That's why we get so many applicants to UW-Madison. We get almost 30,000 applicants for 6,000 positions at the University of Wisconsin for the freshman class, and that's because we're a very good deal around the country. If there's anything that's high, and we're not high relative there either, but it's much, much higher than in-state, is out-of-state tuition. And that concerns some of us because we think that the mix and the diversity that you get with out-of-state students is a positive thing. So having said that, I'm not sure that's the way I would direct my cuts. Now, I'm assuming this is what Governor Walker may have heard around the state. Other legislators are somewhat dubious about this in terms of their comments.
Well, in fact, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he doesn't support a tuition cut. He says tuition is, as you mentioned already, almost or among the lowest in the Big Ten. And he says that instead we should invest in financial aid rather than cutting tuition. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I'm supportive of that. I think that our biggest problem, I did a study with a professor, Bobby Wolf, a few years ago of financial aid at the University of Wisconsin. And what we found is, in fact, that the lowest sector of incomes, and this goes back 35 years, actually, we have data going back to 1972, if you can believe it, that the lowest sector in Wisconsin of income, the lowest 20% income people, are declining in the enrollment in the University of Wisconsin. It's not overall the average is declining in terms of the state. We're not just a school for the rich. That's just not correct. But there are problems at the bottom sector, and we don't know why they are. We're very low on Pell Grants, for example, relative to where we should be. Those are federal grants for low income families, and we're very low in our percentage there. So state aid for the lowest end, that's need-based state aid, I think is a very, very good, strong idea.
I wanted to get your reaction to, it's not getting talked about a whole lot, but one part of Governor Walker's budget would require the creation of a faculty workload policy that would make sure that professors' time is accounted for. Time clock stuff. How much time is being spent in the classroom? He wants to require the reporting of faculty course loads to increase transparency. Ultimately, faculty that spend more time teaching would be rewarded, and institutions with professors who spend more time teaching would be rewarded. What do you think of this requirement?
Well, I'm a little bit bemused by it. It's not necessarily incorrect that faculty members shouldn't spend time in classes. I don't have a across-the-board look at this at all, and it varies dramatically from department to department. For example, in the sciences, they sometimes get these federal grants that actually buy their teaching time out. I mean, they literally buy their time out for teaching for 5 years in a row. They just work on research for 5 years. And a number of those professors, actually, in some of those departments, teach for free. They teach because they want to teach and because they're needed to teach, but they don't have to teach. It's really a free good. I've done that myself when I had grants, for example. So it varies dramatically. In other departments, the teaching loads are quite heavy because they don't get outside funding. So this is a very complicated issue in terms of how you would go about it. There used to be an accounting system that we had to fill out, and I haven't done this for a while because I'm retired since 2012. That you had to actually justify how many hours you spent in different places. I think that got dropped a while back, but they did this. And so people would fill this out. It was self-reporting. Nobody monitored it, and I don't know what good it did, and that probably is why it may have been dropped. So this is an area that should be studied and looked at. I agree with that. But how you're going to do it is going to be so difficult because it's just not the same as K-12 teaching, which I study in great detail. It's just a different world on how you do this. The reputation of the university is based in part on our teaching. Certainly in our graduates is a great part of our the success of the University of Wisconsin system, but it's also based on the research that people do. And how much time should be devoted to which is a very complicated question that varies across departments, and it varies across research fundings and all sorts of things. The research funding at the university pays for a lot of what happens at the university. And we have overhead costs that are 40% on federal grants, for example, and that goes generally to the maintenance of the university in general. So you have to maintain those sorts of cash flows and resource flows. If you increase the teaching load, for example, to two courses more than the comparable courses at the University of Michigan, we're going to lose faculty. We're going to lose them in droves. So you just have to be competitive in that area as well.
UW System President Ray Cross said that the governor's proposed budget reflects many of the University of Wisconsin System's priorities as outlined in a strategic plan. Cross also said, we look forward to working with the governor and the legislature in the months ahead. Do you, just briefly, do you think that overall this is a good budget plan for the University of Wisconsin?
Oh, in general, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we've been having difficulty, right? We've been having cuts. And again, competitively, around the Big Ten and around the country, money to higher education has gone up, not down. And ours have gone down. And I think I think the governor's listening here to what's happening around the country, and not around the country, around our borders. I mean, Illinois, Michigan, Iowa, increases Minnesota. Increases in funding for higher education, and we were declining. Now that's disastrous in my estimation. University of Wisconsin. I'm again, of course, very biased toward this. I've had four generations of family members here. I think it's a treasure for the state, given the size of our state, given the wealth in our state, given the income levels of our state. To have a resource like the University of Wisconsin is just extraordinary.
Mitchell and Fitchburg, we have very short on time, but very quickly, what is your point?
My point is I disagree with the cost of the university and college. I understand that in comparison to the marketplace, maybe it's a very good deal, but it's still extremely expensive and the cost.
Yeah, and so Mitchell is saying, and I'm sorry, the phone is very fuzzy. He said maybe it's competitive, but it's not a deal, and he supports a tuition freeze or cut because it's still hard to pay that, is what he's saying.
That's part of the problem with higher education funding. We're not sure exactly what's going on here. We don't know how much families are contributing. We're not sure how much they're saving for education. We're not sure how much the students are spending and on what. Do they go, you know, a lot of students are going to very fancy high-rise apartments here in city of Madison. So I'm not sure I'm totally sympathetic with that. What we do know is that the payback in lifetime income of graduating from college is huge. And one of the big problems in the United States is the gap between people who have college educations and do not, and the income flows that are going because of that.
Well, we will have to bring you back to talk more as this budget moves through. Thanks very much for being with us. John Witte, a professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we are going to welcome in a guest expert to talk about social welfare aspects of the state budget. will continue our examination of Governor Walker's state budget proposal, which he unveiled last night, or I should say late yesterday afternoon, in his state budget address. Governor Walker outlined changes he is proposing for Wisconsin's food share program. He wants to expand work requirements to able-bodied adults with school-aged children who are receiving food stamps. He says that they should work 80 hours a month or be enrolled in a state job training program. Let's take a listen to this.
People want to work. It goes against our human nature to think that we should permanently be dependent on the government. Here in Wisconsin, we are good and decent people. We will help our fellow citizen when they are down and out. But public assistance should be a trampoline, not a hammock.
I got cut off a little bit. A trampoline, not a hammock, is what he says public assistance program should be. Do you support or oppose the governor's changes to the food share program? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. The governor went on to say that he also wants to drug test the recipients of food stamps and public assistance. Right now, that plan is on hold because of court decisions. But he says he wants that drug testing program to go forward, and those who test positive for drugs would be put into a drug treatment program and eventually in a job where an employer requires a clean drug test. So what do we think of all this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next guest is Sarah Halpern Meekin. She's an assistant professor of human development and family studies at the University of Wisconsin School of Human Ecology. One of her areas of study includes the effect of the changing welfare system on low-income families. And we thank her very much for joining us very early in the morning from the West Coast. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So, Governor Walker's budget proposal would require the parents of school-aged children to either work or participate in job training. If they don't, their food stamp benefits are cut off. What's your reaction to this? How would this affect Wisconsinites?
Well, I think it's really important, first of all, to make sure that people understand that we're not talking about most of the food share recipients in Wisconsin. So most food share recipients in Wisconsin are children or are disabled or are elderly. And a substantial portion of the working age adults who are food share recipients are working now. So we're talking about a pretty small portion of the food share population here. So I think it's just important people understand we're not talking about most people. I was heartened that the governor was paying attention to the employment and training needs of lower income people. As he said, people really do want to work. And I'm happy to see him paying attention to trying to fulfill those desires. That said, I do have some concerns about how this will roll out, what exactly it means. And I think my top concern is that by focusing so much on employment and training, we neglect the constellation of factors that come together to allow people to work. Yes. So it's not just about having adequate training, but having training in a job that's available in the area where you live, having transportation. As we know, in a lot of Wisconsin, there's no public transportation, and so getting to your job can be a challenge. And we also need to think about the care responsibilities that people have. If the only job you can get is from 4 p.m. to midnight and you have young kids, how do you juggle that? How do you handle it? So I would like to see how attention to this constellation of issues is going to take shape.
Yeah. And thank you. I'm trying to, when you mentioned that that this only affects a small proportion of food stamp recipients, you mentioned that children are the beneficiaries of the food stamps. If you're the parent of a child, so the child would still get food stamps even if the parent is cut off?
Right. I believe the governor's proposal is that a portion of the family's food share benefit would be docked. And that's in line with what's been done in the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. We call it W-2 here in Wisconsin. But some people know that as cash welfare. So that's been the approach there, that parents could get docked and their children could keep receiving benefits. What it means is that overall the family receives a smaller benefit. And we're not talking about large benefits in the first place in the case of the food share program. So the average benefit for a Wisconsin family is just over $200 a month.
Another point that Governor Walker addressed involved the extension of child care benefits so that people don't reach a certain income level and then immediately drop off of assistance. He said, for many, this becomes a deterrent to working more hours or taking a promotion. And that he said that this change will eliminate that so-called cliff. Is this a concern, this cliff? Is this a deterrent for working families?
Yeah, so when he says a cliff effect, basically what that means is that you get a benefit up until you earn X number of dollars. And then if you get $1 over that, you lose your benefit entirely. So you go from all to nothing. And that can have a really big impact on families. So I think paying attention to how we can phase out benefits as opposed to having families experience the cliff is a good idea.
Yeah. We have a limited time and some callers with questions, so let me go to Chuck and Eagle. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is, whereas I'm not a fan of the governor per se overall, I think this resurrection of the, well, similar to Tommy Thompson's workfare, is actually a good idea for the people, and I've been wondering for years why it has not been implemented at a bigger rate, because people overall need to have a feeling of accomplishment. And through work, you can get that feeling of accomplishment. And look, here's what I did today. Here's what I'm going to do tomorrow. Here's what I did for my family. Not to say let's cut those benefits. I like the portion of, child care. People reach a certain level, they're not going to be cut off automatically. So if we take a cautious, pragmatic approach, I think it's a great idea.
All right, a reaction to that, Sarah?
As I said, I think the attention to employment and training is good. However, I'm concerned that that may not be adequate for some families with a difficult set of circumstances to actually meet that requirement. If your transportation, your care responsibilities, your training, and where you live don't all align, I'm worried that this employment and training might not be enough to help parents meet that requirement and then would experience a loss of their food benefits.
Yeah. Governor Walker said he's also working with the new administration in Washington and Congress to get approval to expand drug testing for people seeking public assistance. He added that if there's a failure, treatment would be provided to get them healthy and back into the workforce. Talk some about how helpful or not this is.
Well, I'm a fan of evidence-based policy, and I think the evidence for this is not particularly strong. Some other states have tried drug testing, particularly around their welfare benefits, and basically, they've found that they end up spending a lot of money and finding very few people who are using drugs. In fact, in the states where they've done this, often they end up finding that a smaller percentage of welfare recipients are showing up as drug users than we know is the case for the general population. And so my thought is that it might be better to use the scarce public dollars that we have elsewhere.
Darren and Baraboo, you have a comment on this? Darren, are you there? Well, Darren's there, but I can't hear him. So, I think he was going to kind of say that he thought that other states have tried this and it's been a huge failure. But in any case, in the days ahead, in our final minutes, what are you watching for as lawmakers consider these proposals?
Well, I'm hoping that there will be attention to the existing employment and training program that we have for food share, how we can build its efficacy and capacity, and whether or not we can programmatically pay attention to those other factors that are going to affect families' employment. I think it's really important that we ensure the well-being of families. Particularly, we're talking now about families with children, how parents are doing deeply impacts how their children are doing. And so to think that we could somehow punish parents without affecting their children, I think is misguided. So really ensuring that we're going to support parents' success as much as possible will be key.
Yeah, we have a caller who I can't get on air, but is concerned that if adults get their food share benefits cut off, that is going to result in hungry children. Are you concerned about that?
It leaves families without a lot of great options. So either parents can continue making sure their kids were eating as much as before and go hungry themselves, which has negative implications for their ability to parent, their ability to find jobs, or the family can all experience a loss of food. And again, that's not great for kids and it's not great for parents.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sarah Halpern-Meekin is an assistant professor of human development and family studies at the University of Wisconsin School of Ecology, talking with us about Governor Walker's proposed changes to the food share program. We also heard from John Witte, a professor emeritus of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison, talking about budget aspects of Governor Walker's budget. And we also heard from a guest from the MacGyver Institute for Public Policy, Chris Rochester, about the transportation budget. So there's our roundup of three big areas of the state budget. We will continue to follow state budget issues in the days ahead. Thank you to Bill Martins and to Brianne Shasso and to Nyasia Ellison for producing this roundup. This is the Ideas Network.